Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth? The truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world. So welcome to the 578th edition of SDG. And the title of today's message, folks, is 2022 Endgame Update Number 42. And a little later in this message, hang on, because we're going to tie it all into the truth about power and authority. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 and the beginning at 26, "But Jesus called unto him and said, Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them, but it shall not be so among you." And he was referring to the believers, folks. So stay tuned to learn that as Christians, how we actually hold all the power, not the cabal, not the deep state. And the bottom line, folks, as always, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. We're just God's people, and we're passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity, and stay tuned to find out the latest news that the lying mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, how did it start? How did it all get happening? Well, it all began with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, folks, let's look at something from a past episode. Now, last week, we played one of our own, my good friend Seth, who was being interviewed at a Trump rally in Latrobe, PA, right before the midterms. And by the way, folks, this wasn't by a friendly. This was by a rather hostile or at least skeptical reporter from the program known as Status Quo. Now, this less than friendly reporter from Status Quo started sparring with Seth concerning election integrity. And so Seth brought up the recent stolen election in Brazil, where a convicted criminal, a former president known as Lula, was placed as president, and I use that term properly, folks. He was placed. He wasn't duly elected, and it's coming out now down in Brazil, and more on that in a minute. But Seth suggested to this arrogant reporter to look into this one program known as Operation Car Wash. So let's hear Seth say it in his own words.
But, I mean, look at the elections in Brazil with Bolsonaro and Lula.
Yeah.
Lula was a criminal in jail. They pull that
but,
guy.
Like, I don't know tons about this, but, like, basically falsely accused by, like, his political rival, though, from what I understand.
What is it? Operation Car Wash. Operation Car Wash. Look into that. That tells you everything that he was involved with.
Right.
The oil companies and whatnot.
From what I understand, like, Lula was basically, like, framed by a thing. Because, like, he's out now, obviously. Like,
he's out now,
and he's going to be president.
You know, the one, everybody came out for Bolsonaro and drones, millions of them, which is, you know, similar to kind of how what you see here.
So
I guess they could call them.
I guess, so with the elections going on, coming up right now,
mm-hmm.
Like, are you going to support the results, or are you going to say that there were, like, where does it end, I guess?
Well, there you heard it, folks, right out of Seth's mouth, and by the way, this man is extremely knowledgeable. So what exactly is Operation Car Wash? Well, here's a brief summary from the Financial Times describing Operation Car Wash fairly well for a mainstream media source. Here's a 2.5-minute clip. Let's have a listen.
Billions of dollars in bribes, hundreds of thousands of jobs lost, and hundreds of executives politicians and officials implicated. Brazil's Operation Car Wash is one of the world's largest ever corruption scandals. The probe, named after one of the businesses used to launder the kickbacks, shook Brazil to the core. Now, 5 years later, the effects continue to be felt, with fresh arrests threatening to upset Brazil's political status quo. The scandal first engulfed Brazil in 2014 when police arrested Alberto Youssef, a black market banker, on suspicion of money laundering. Upon questioning, Youssef revealed a much deeper web of intrigue that implicated executives of Petrobras, Brazil's state-owned oil producer. They were getting kickbacks for granting inflated contracts to a cartel of construction companies led by Odebrecht. And they weren't the only ones on the take. Scores of politicians were also on the payroll. The probe implicated almost a third of Brazil's 594-member Congress. The scandal brought Petrobras' projects to a shuddering halt. As its share price plummeted, the company shed tens of thousands of jobs. Brazil wasn't the only country affected. Infrastructure projects across Latin America collapsed like dominoes. The slowdown contributed to a recession that in 2016 helped trigger the impeachment of Brazil's then-president, Dilma Rousseff. The probe also implicated Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the popular former president who was planning to run for office again. He was sentenced last year to 12 years in prison. With the new administration of Jair Bolsonaro, many in Brazil thought the investigation would draw to a close. But the arrest in March of Michel Temer, another former president, amid allegations he ran a criminal organization, suggests that car wash investigators still have more cleaning up to do.
Oh, folks, I apologize. I had my mute on. I was talking and you didn't hear me. You know, repeating what I said, this sounds like the now unfolding FTX scandal here in the U.S., where over $37 million was laundered to Democrats to steal this midterm. And on top of that, folks, $3 million to six rhinos who voted to impeach Trump. It's going to be very interesting to see how this whole FTX money laundering scandal unfolds here in the United States. This may be our Operation Car Wash. But did you hear what this reporter said? Lula, the one who was placed as president of Brazil to reestablish their global carbon initiatives and all the other great reset lockstep procedures, was convicted to 12 years in prison.
The probe also implicated Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the popular former president who was planning to run for office again. He was sentenced last year to 12 years in prison.
12 years in prison, folks. Did you hear that? Yet he was out. Now, that reporter talking to Seth said, well, you know, that was all political. Well, yeah, it was political. And yes, he was wrong. And the courts that reversed the judgment, they're very liberal courts that are right now fighting any attempts by the Minister of Defense or Bolsonaro's party to present evidence of possible voter fraud, presidential election in Brazil. Now, his own party, Bolsonaro's own party, just recently discovered manipulation of digital voting machines as a very serious possibility and highly probable. So they applied to the Supreme Court to have the election and all. But this Supreme Court is corrupt, folks, full of leftists. In fact, they have their own police force. But praise the Lord, the military is also standing behind this concern. And so there may be an escalation in Brazil between and the far-left judiciary. This is looming here, folks. And there's even the word insurrection starting to come up. Sound familiar? This is a play taken right out of the Marxist playbook, folks. This is what brought down Tsarist Russia back in the early 1900s. Now, there's a reader from Brazil who reported that the northeast part of Brazil is relatively quiet, with just demonstrations out in front of the army barracks on the main motorway known as BR-232 between the cities of Recife and Caracu. And he reported that the heavier protests are down in the southeast in cities like Rio de Janeiro and the capital city of Brasilia. And he said he's going to keep us up here updated as, in terms of what's happening. But let's see what the mainstream media is reporting on all of this activity going on down in Brazil by the People Nation. And folks, bottom line, that is pure evil. Not to report on something that significant implies conspiracy or at least collusion. And speaking of evil, here's one more topic from past episodes. This forbidden topic that, as Dave Chappelle said so well, can be summed up by two words: the Jews. And remember the firestorm that was started by Ye, I guess is how you say it, formerly known as Kanye West. And just this Saturday night, on Saturday Night Live, Dave Chappelle, the host, tricked the Saturday Night Live producers by doing a fake monologue during the dress rehearsal. So anyways, when he went live, he blasted the world with some very powerful satire. Let's have a listen. It's a 4-minute and 44-second clip. Dave Chappelle's opening monologue last week's Saturday Night Live.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Chappelle!
Much for being here. But before I start tonight, I just wanted to read a brief statement that I prepared. I denounce anti-Semitism in all its forms. And I stand with my friends in the Jewish community. And that, Kanye, is how you buy yourself some time. I got to tell you guys, I've probably been doing this 35 years now. And early in my career, I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are the and Jew. I've never heard someone do good after they said that. He's gotten into some scrapes before. Normally when he's in trouble, I pull up immediately. But this time I was like, you know what? Let me see what's going to happen first. Let's see. Let's see where this is all going. I can't even remember how it started. Vaguely, I remember it started with a tweet, strange tweet. It was like, I'm feeling a little sleepy. I'm going to give me some rest, but when I wake up, I'm going to go DEFCON 3 on the Jews. And then he just went to bed. I was up all night worried. What is he going to do to the Jews? I grew up around Jewish people. I have a lot of Jewish friends. So I'm not freaked out by your culture. I know a little bit about it just from hanging around. I'd be like, yo, let's go out after school tomorrow. They'd be like, we can't go out. It's Sha-na-na tomorrow. I'd be like, where? What is Sha-na-na? I had so many questions. Why do some of your people dress like Run DMC? Kanye woke up from that nap, he went right to work. A year ago, I'd seen him on a podcast called Drink Champs, a great show, and it was an amazing appearance. Noriega and them were there, the rappers that I love, and they all had their gold chains and stuff on. And Kanye said, only millionaires wear chains. They said, what? He said, I'm a billionaire. Billionaires don't wear their money on their body. I tucked my chain and I said, oh, snap. It was good parents. It was fun and funny. But when he woke up, he went on Drink Champs again. This time, he was on one. He was mad about something. He said, I can say anti-Semitic things, and the Adidas can't drop me. Now what? Adidas dropped that nigga immediately. Ironically, Adidas was founded by Nazis. And they were offended. I guess the student surpassed the teacher. It's a big deal. See, in Brooklyn, show business rules. It's just a rule. You know, the rules of perception. If they're black, then it's a gang. If they're Italian, it's a mob. But if they're Jewish, it's a coincidence, and you should never speak about it.
That was excellent, folks.
You know, Dave Chappelle got blasted like Seinfeld for this routine, but I think it was well done. Now, he's been desensitizing Americans to anti-Semitism after a couple jokes relating to Jewish power in the media and Hollywood and sports. But folks, it's the truth. Now, there was a bit of gaslighting going on there when he mocked Kanye for saying that he can say anti-Semitic things because he's a Jew. Well, remember, we covered the book and the documentary From Hebrews to Negroes. And that's something else that the establishment does not want out, folks. So he opened his monologue by that little sarcastic, I denounce anti-Semitism in all forms. Well, remember, we distinguish on here between race, religion, and politics. And, of course, you don't demean people for their race or their religion, but their politics, fair game, folks. Yet they're hiding under their oppressed minority position with regard to all of their globalistic Great Reset politics. But that's exactly where Jews need to be scrutinized. And then I loved how he closed that out in the part that we played. If you're black, it's a gang. If you're Italian, it's a mob. But if you're Jewish, it's just a coincidence. And you should never speak about it. And then he goes on and he notes how Kyrie Irving has been given all sorts of penalties and fines by the NBA. And he's being deplatformed all because he posted a link to that documentary, From Hebrews to Negroes. Talk about pathetic, folks. Talk about controlled. There's no other word for it, folks. We have to keep moving, and right now it's time for Sister Kathy and Brother Alex's Freak Geeks News Update. And as we do every week, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist update.
The coronavirus, COVID-19, what call it? Pandemic, the coronavirus, it's a scandemic. They call it the great equalizer. And say we're all in this together, except that for the bankers, politicians, and powers to be. And folks, that ain't either you or me. So let's all wake up to the coronavirus heist and just say they know all their lies and mind control.
Now, folks, before we dive into our sudden adult death syndrome update, I'd just like to shout out to some of your regular listeners there and thank you. People like those regulars that call in live. There's one from area code 708. Thank you. And then to all of my regulars, like Brother Alex, Sister Kathy, Eric, Melissa, Ethan, and even Seth, who you've heard now a couple times in a row here on the show. I'm going to ask you for some help. Please, folks, I'm not asking for money. I'm not asking for anything more than to post the link to these shows. And the best place to do it is in comment sections of articles that you read. If you can do that, you could help in your own special way to get the word out. You know, you folks are great. You're red-pilled, you're intelligent, you're articulate. So please help. Let's get this word out. Maybe we could save a few lives, especially with this update we do every week on the coronavirus heist. So Brother Alex told me last week that there's a Telegraph page out dedicated to reporting on sudden adult death syndrome, and it's titled COVID BC Vax Reactions. And all you have to do is go to Telegram, put that in, and you'll come right up on their page. So thank you, Brother Alex. And I encourage you all to go check that out. And that's how we get the word out, by spreading these links. Podcasts like this to Telegram pages like that. Now, here's a very tragic, sad story, or should I say SCAD story, sudden child adult death syndrome. This fit and healthy 10-year-old from England, 10-year-old, collapses and dies. Cool. This happened on November 9th when 10-year-old from Wakefield, West Yorkshire, England, child in good health, died suddenly after collapsing at school. Parva Siddiqui was rushed to the hospital last Wednesday after she suddenly collapsed during some time at school. Now, the Daily Mail reports that the child suddenly fell ill while at school, was taken to the Pinderfields Hospital in Wakefield, and then transferred to the Leeds General Infirmary, but died 5 days later. And the supposed cause of death at this point was a brain hemorrhage. Yet the doctors are baffled. Now, I'm saying this is extremely tragic. I don't belittle this. And I ask that we send our prayers out to her family. But let me tell you something, folks. The doctors must be baffled, or else they'll lose their licenses. Now, if you're poo-pooing this idea, just look at what happened to the good doctor, Peter McCullough. They did it to him. And why? You know, folks, many seemingly smart people seem to be stuck in some sort of cognitive dissonance when it comes to the COVID death jab. They just don't want to believe, or they simply cannot believe, that anyone, especially the government, would intentionally harm them. But the truth is that it's easier to fool someone than to convince them that they have been fooled. I think it was Mark Twain who said that. And even when they realize that this is the case, that they've been duped, some are so arrogant and so proud that they choose death over humility. And humility is one of the keys that we'll be talking about at the end of this message that'll lead you, as a believer, to true power and authority. But a little bit more on that later on. Did you hear what NBC just came out with this week, folks? It's amazing. But NBC, let me call up this clip here. NBC, I have this shorthand I use here now. It's helping get these clips up a little faster. But this is a report that was out just last week that NBC now acknowledges that myocarditis can be linked to the COVID death jab. So a rather long clip, but it's the entire article. Let's have a listen. It's 5 minutes.
NBC acknowledges myocarditis link to COVID-19 vaccines after sudden deaths of young adults. LifeSite News, in a sign of a potential shift in the mainstream media's coverage of the issue, NBC News has published a report acknowledging a possible link between COVID-19 vaccines and myocarditis. NBC's November 12th report opens with an anecdote about Detroit resident Devian Miller, who at age 22 passed out at his home and was later hospitalized and diagnosed with myocarditis and pericarditis 1 week after receiving his first dose of Pfizer's mRNA-based COVID shot and was subsequently advised by doctors not to receive his second. Myocarditis is a condition that has long been linked to a number of viral infections, including influenza, Coxsackie viruses, as well as COVID, the report says. It has also been observed as an infrequent but worrisome side effect of the mRNA COVID vaccines. It then goes on to say there have been around 1,000 reports of vaccine-related myocarditis or pericarditis in children under age 18, primarily young males, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U.S. government's Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, gives a much higher number for overall myocarditis and pericarditis cases, 53,836 as of November 4th. An April study out of Israel indicates that COVID infection alone cannot account for such cases, despite claims to the contrary. Reports submitted to VAERS about possible cases are not yet confirmed, as anyone can submit a report, but CDC researchers have acknowledged high verification rate of reports of myocarditis to VAERS after mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccination, leading to the conclusion that underreporting is more likely than overreporting. The report also reveals that Moderna and Pfizer, the creators of the two mRNA-based jabs, are conducting the first research in the U.S. into potential heart problems associated with their products. Two Moderna trials are currently underway. A Pfizer trial is set to begin in coming months. Early findings required by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration could be published starting early next year. But in the meantime, the FDA continues to claim there is no evidence of increased risk of deaths following mRNA vaccines compared to individuals who did not get vaccinated, and that evidence from well-conducted, peer-reviewed, published studies suggests that the risk of death is higher for unvaccinated individuals for nearly every age group. Still, the report represents a significant departure from the mainstream media's treatment of the issue over the past 2 years, during which any affirmation of the shot's harms was treated as dangerous medical misinformation. Despite such discouragement of discussing the subject, many harbor moral and practical reservations about the COVID-19 vaccines, given the use of aborted fetal cells in their development, the superiority of natural immunity, COVID's low risk to most otherwise healthy individuals, the vaccine's failure to prevent infection, their accelerated development under former President Donald Trump's Operation Warp Speed initiative, giving them only a fraction of the evaluation and development time vaccines normally take, the lack of transparency from their manufacturers, and mounting evidence of serious adverse effects. VAERS is not the only data source indicating cause for concern. Data from the Pentagon's Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, DMED, has been similarly alarming, showing that 2021 saw drastic spikes in a variety of diagnoses for serious medical issues over the previous five-year average, including hypertension, 2,181%, neurological disorders, 1,048%, multiple sclerosis, 680%, Guillain-Barré syndrome, 551%, breast cancer, 487%, female infertility, 472%, pulmonary embolism, 468%, migraines, 452%, ovarian dysfunction, 437%, testicular cancer, 369%, and tachycardia, 302%. In September, the Japanese Society for Vaccinology published a peer-reviewed study conducted by researchers from Stanford, UCLA, and the University of Maryland, which found that the Pfizer trial exhibited a 36% higher risk of serious adverse events in the vaccine group, while the Moderna trial exhibited a 6% higher risk of serious adverse events in the vaccine group, for a combined 16% higher risk of serious adverse events in mRNA vaccine recipients.
Folks, that was the report from NBC. So now they talked in that report about 53,000 reported VAERS cases of myocarditis, and they said that that's usually underreported. Well, you know where they didn't go? They didn't go to the 2012 Boston College study, which has actually correlated this on the VAERS report to a 43x multiplier. 1,000 reported cases of myocarditis multiplied by 43, you get 2.3 million cases of myocarditis now here in the United States. That's sick, folks. And then hedge fund manager turned red-pilled advocate Ed Dowd, who started the page theylliedpeopledied.com, go out and check it out, is showing that since the jab has been given to the general public, there's a 30% increase in daily deaths. And this is mostly concentrated on the working class, many of whom have been forced to get these jabs to continue employment. Yet, NBC, who now reports on this, continues to have on their webpage, and you want to talk about irony here, folks? They continue to have on their website on YouTube this pro-booster vax propaganda, and I don't have any other word for it. But it's a little five-minute clip, and we're going to play it here, of Al Roker, you know, the weatherman, who's so friendly and gregarious. Well, he was just hospitalized for blood clots in his lungs after getting the booster. Here's a clip that they played a year ago, live on the Today Show, of Al Roker getting jabbed. Really getting jabbed, folks, not one of these fake jabs. Here's Al, and just listen to how it's all gaslighting, how it's all propaganda. And now Al's in the hospital with blood clots. They just report on this myocarditis, yet they keep this up, and they don't post any disclaimer. That's hypocrisy, folks. That's gaslighting. That's propaganda. Let's have a listen.
Oh, we're back, 8:13. Carson rejoins. Time for our series, Vaccinating America.
All right, guys, it is go time for Uncle Al. Now, Al, before you get your vaccination here, remind everybody how you qualify.
Well, I qualify because I am over 65 years old. So now, by according to New York State, I could apply. And all weekend long, I went on the New York State health.gov website and kept logging in, had in my my information, kept logging in. I finally hit pay dirt Sunday morning, and I got assigned here to Lenox Hill Hospital. And so that's how I made it. But it was a constant. I kept hitting refresh on the browser. And finally got in, guys.
You've got to stick with it, I guess.
Yeah, because it's, look, they put up a certain number of appointments each day, and then, you know, luck of the draw, and so you have to keep going in. For example, I've got a brother, Chris, who runs New York City Health and Hospitals Metropolitan. He said, hey, you can come here. I said, I don't want to jump the line.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this officially and above board. So I figured this was the best, and this was where I ended up, Lenox Hill Hospital, which just happens to be the place where both Nick and Chris, Nick and Lila were born.
Oh, sweet. Nice. Real quick, Al, I know a lot of people, and my mom included, were trying to get appointments, and you can still hit it, and sometimes you don't get one till February, March, or April. Is there a way to try to, I don't know, speed up the pace a little?
No, it really is where, you know, depending on which facility puts on a number of appointments. They get the vaccine, they put in for those appointments. So if you're lucky enough, as I was, to get in now, it could have just as easily been February or March. But
yeah.
I lucked out.
They're going quick. You know, there was 300 appointments at Lenox on Sunday.
Wow.
And from 9:07 to 9:15, they went like that. For the million plus, 65 and older in New York City, this is a tough thing, but we're glad you're there. Wow. What shot are you getting, Al?
Well, I'm getting the Pfizer vaccine. In fact, let me bring in Dr. Daniel Baker. He's the medical director here at Lenox Hill. So I'm getting the Pfizer vaccine, Doc. This is two vaccines spread out over 3 weeks.
Yes, over 21 days.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask the question because a lot of people: is it safe?
Absolutely. We get asked that a lot, but, you know, the clinical trials really showed its efficacy, and we've seen hundreds of thousands of doses since, and everybody's doing rather quite well. So,
a lot of people want to know, once you get the vaccine, especially after you get two doses, do I still need to wear a mask?
Yes. That's actually a key component of keeping us all safe. We're not going to know who has had the vaccine. We're also going to take some time in terms of getting up to enough people to where we can really take these masks off. So mask wearing is going to be with us for some time now.
Once I'm fully vaccinated, can I still be asymptomatic and spread COVID?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's not what the clinical trials looked at. So we're hopeful the answer is no. As with most diseases, when you get some immunity, we're hoping you wouldn't then be able to then transmit it. But we're going to see as these things go, and we'll have a little bit more information coming.
You know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to wait until we get herd immunity. Yeah. So I don't really need to get vaccinated. Pop that balloon for me, would you?
Yeah, that's a tough one because herd immunity really comes at about 85 to 90%. And the only way to get there is if everybody goes for the vaccine. Mm-hmm. We're going to get that 10 to 15% by people who couldn't get it because of a medical illness or something along those lines. So we all have to do our part. We have to go get the vaccine to really create that herd immunity.
So after I get this first dose, what am I going to feel?
So the first dose, you're going to feel a little bit of the soreness in the arm there. Uh-huh. So not unlike the flu vaccine. But you're going to be up and on the Today Show tomorrow morning, no problem.
All right. And I know you got the vaccine, and when it first came here, you had a mixed emotions.
Absolutely. It was very inspiring, incredible. It rolled right through the doors outside there, and we all stopped and actually took a selfie just with the box. It was just an incredible, inspiring, hopeful moment.
Well, I've got a hopeful moment now. Thanks to Nurse Jessica Callard. Jessica,
hi.
So I've answered a bunch of questions ahead of time, and so we're ready to do this?
Yes, we are.
Okay. So now where do you do the vaccination itself?
So
you have to roll all the way up.
Yeah, it's pretty high. It's in your deltoid muscle, so it's just around here.
Okay.
Okay, and you answered no to all the questions. So
right.
Do you have any questions for me?
When you did you get the shot?
I did.
How'd you feel afterwards?
I felt good.
All right. Well, let's get ready.
All right.
The question is, will I get a Hello Kitty Band-Aid?
There we go. Uncle Al, get his vaccination.
Get the shot. Al, think
okay,
about think
it.
About the happy things.
That's right.
Puppy dogs.
There you go.
Pies and cake.
Wow, that was, look at Nurse Jessica.
Jessica.
Oh, yeah. Jessica.
Done and done.
That's excellent.
Wow, Nurse Jessica. What a pro.
Thank you very much.
Uncle Al.
And it's a generic Band-Aid, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you got a Band-Aid. Okay.
Yeah, wait. What did you want to know?
Well, I was too late now. I was gonna ask the doctor if the shot's more effective in the rear end, but it looks like it's in the arm now. So.
Carson wants to know, doctor, could you have gotten it in the rear end?
Well, that answer is no.
Okay. Carson,
deltoid.
All right.
Thank you.
In the deltoid. See, I need some cats like Carson. That would have made this much better.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Al.
We're happy for you, Al.
Glad you're feeling good.
So I don't know if you heard that term. It kept coming up in there. Luck. And at one point he said, I just lucked out and got my appointment. Luck of the draw. You know, there's more truth in that than he knew, folks. He got the Pfizer. And remember, there are three batches out there. The saline, the regular mRNA, and a little bit more on mRNA after I make this thought. And then the killer batch. And you can actually get your lot number and go out and see which one you have. And these are Pfizer documents, folks. Now, here's another thing. I was at Seth's birthday party on Monday evening, and we were talking about mRNA. Now, most people think that means messenger RNA, but with regard to these vaccines, it means modified ribonucleic acid. It's a modifier. It's going in there, folks, and modifying your system. And it's actually in some of the papers that Seth has. And that Dr. Baker, Don Baker, he is a liar. And I'm saying that publicly right now. And we can validate everything he lied to the public with on this Today Show propaganda a year ago. He was asked by Al if it's safe, and he replied, absolutely safe. Clinical trials have proven that and its efficacy. Both lies, folks. Here's an example of a doctor who's duped. And is going along to get along because he doesn't want to lose his license, or he's really dumb and shouldn't be a doctor. And then when asked about herd immunity, another lie. The only way to get herd immunity is by getting the jab into 85% of the population. What about natural immunity? These are liars, folks. And Don Baker, he should be brought up on charges. He should be, folks. So we have to keep moving. And right now it's time for the Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. In Japanese, ka means solve. Bu means dance. Ki means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slam or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid. Must slow down the velocity of money. Portal hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030. And the new world will just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Because the gaslighters are calling it, it's now over. And we've been gaslighted, or we're being gaslighted. But this time, not by the Democratic-loving mainstream media, the Marxists. No, it's by the conservative media. They're apparently carrying the water for the deep state now, folks. And the red tsunami, the red wave that they started saying near the election day was going to be a red tsunami, became nothing more than a red stain. Just look at the steals in Pennsylvania and Arizona. Fetterman, this stroke victim, beat Dr. Oz. Really? You believe that one? You probably believe that there was no foreknowledge of Pearl Harbor either, or that a lone gunman killed JFK. And then don't even get me started on Katie Hobbs. Folks, the truth is that these elections were stolen. So do not let anyone gaslight you into thinking other ways. Now, J.D. Ruckert offered a way to fight back in Arizona. Could it get stolen? And this week, Arizona was stolen. And the gaslighting began. But don't fall for it, folks. You know, we must resist evil and fight back. Not on their terms, but on God's. Now, back on November 15th, J.D. Rucker shared some of the very same thoughts that I have, and I just want to walk through them with you, folks. So, this lie that's being foisted upon us by the media, conservative and liberal alike, is that you got to believe that for the first time in modern history, all of these sophisticated scientific pollings have been so wrong, all favoring a Republican so heavily, yet somehow the Democrats, who typically always pull about 3 to 6% ahead in any race, made it a close call at the polls. Now, the Republicans actually had a better chance of winning this than the Democrats did, because real results from the GOP always outperform their polling, and they were ahead in the polling. So they should have been like landslide on their wins, like we saw in Florida and Ohio. Now, in Florida, where the polls favored the Republicans, candidates actually had victories bigger than the polls showed, and the same thing in Ohio. And why was that? Well, because both states between the 2020 still and the 2022 still tightened up all the loopholes. So instead of the races getting close, they were landslides like they should have been for the Republicans. Yet what we saw across the rest of the country was very different. Inexplicably, undeniably different, folks. So instead of these close races going to the Republicans, they defied every election standard in modern history, and they went to the Democrats. Even the candidates who were clearly winning in the final days of polling, like Carrie Lake for governor over in Arizona, or Dr. Oz here in Pennsylvania. But both saw their wins reversed. And then that turncoat Oz, he concedes. I say deep state plant. Yet Carrie Lake, God bless her, she's fighting it. Now, here's the red flag, folks, and proof that evil abounds. This red tsunami that everyone and their dog predicted was only thwarted in the states where voter fraud was actually permitted. Look at Pennsylvania. The Republican Congress, or not, I should say House in Pennsylvania, brought some laws to the desk of Democrat Governor Wolf, require voter ID, and to tighten up these mail-in ballots, and he vetoed both. And we had this upset of Dr. Oz, and nothing changed in Arizona. There's free and easily unverifiable mail-in ballots, ballot harvesting, unchecked vote counting practices, and don't even get me started on these Dominion machines. Yet in the states with the stricter laws like Florida and Ohio, we saw that predictive red wave. Yet in the states where this fraud is now de facto legalized, like Arizona and Pennsylvania, we saw a complete swing in the expectations. And these wins went to these evil and corrupt Democrats. Now, there's corruption on both sides, don't get me wrong. But the Democrats, they're playing very dirty here, folks. They have no morality, no ethics, no win at any cost. Now, what's really sad is that in most of the conservative media and alt media right now, we're hearing all kinds of excuses. And that's where I say this is gaslighting. Gaslighting, folks. For example, I've heard conservative pundits this week that I used to respect claim that the abortion issue is what caused the failure of the red tsunami. And this is patently false, and I'll tell you why. And this is critical thinking, folks. So let's do a little bit of critical thinking here. Nobody woke up on election day and said, I think I'm going to change my mind. And instead of voting for the Republicans, like I've been telling the pollsters for the last 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to switch my vote on election day, and I'm going to vote Democrat. Because I remember Lindsey Graham wants to create a nationwide abortion ban, so I'm going to vote for the Democrats instead. That didn't happen, folks. Abortion issue was, in fact, an issue that could have stopped the red tsunami, then we'd have seen it reflected in the polling the week before the election. But we didn't, because it's a lie. In fact, many Democratic candidates had switched their ads in the final weeks to stop focusing on abortion simply because the polling showed that it had no effect on the general population. So that's a lie, folks. These pundits on the right and even some of the alt-media people are lying to you. And why? Because they don't want to lose their platforms. Folks, I've been throttled so much for speaking the truth. I've watched my reach diminish, but I will never stop speaking the truth. And that's why I asked you a little earlier in the show to get this word out. Post it to your favorite sites in the comment sections. Tell your friends. Put it on your social media pages. Because right now, this platform that I'm on doesn't get blocked. But I am being throttled when I try to market it. So I need your help with that, folks, so we can get the truth out. Now, another thing we should have seen was in all the governor's races across the country. If this was true about the abortion ban throwing the red wave, we should have seen these governors who supported abortion bans in their states get thrown out, but they didn't. Another lie. Now, others are blaming it on the quote-unquote MAGA Republicans. They're just bad candidates. But we know that's false. Look at Carrie Lake, for example. She is all in as a MAGA candidate, and she ran a pitch-perfect campaign. She didn't miss a single detail, and she was leading in the polls, sometimes double-digit. Now, without massive widespread voter fraud, I suspect she actually won with double digits against a very weak Katie Hobbs, who wouldn't debate and has been caught and convicted in multiple scandals. And her only pitch to the voters was that Carrie Lake was somehow dangerous. Her words, not mine, folks. So this woman, Katie Hobbs, who stole the election, is now counting the ballots. Didn't recuse herself as Secretary of State. And she ran a non-existent campaign like Joe Biden back in 2020, winning against a person who the people have known and trusted for decades as a television news anchor. Folks, think critically here again. This simply did not happen. We're being lied to. But some people were pointing to the student loan forgiveness, claiming that the blue wave came from the students. And this is ludicrous and gaslighting at its best. And here's why. For the past 60 years, college students have been voting blue. So there's nothing new here. That was just status quo. Folks, we the people are being gaslit. Just like Wayne Allen Root said in a recent column. But it's sad to say that we're not just being gaslit now by the corporate left. This time it's the conservative news outlets that are blaming the election losses on everything from massive widespread protests against abortion to these students wanting their loan forgiveness. When the truth is, there's widespread evil voter fraud everywhere you turn. Folks, just know this. If you feel it in your gut that there's voter fraud, and that's the main reason we didn't see the red tsunami, you're not alone. You know, today people on both sides of the political aisle are going to have to convince you otherwise, and they're trying their best. And you're going to be labeled an election denier, and this is getting into the meme of culture. And that ought to be so scary, folks, because this is exactly what happened in Bolshevik Russia. Now, just as Seth said in his interview, he may not know all the details, and he'd like to see them. But you know, this whole thing, politics, is a big theater, kabuki theater, and that's why I call it that. Think logically here. would a population who's been decimated by these liberal policies from energy to economics for the last 2 years just say, oh, I want more torture. Put me through two more years under this democratic control. Remember the old saying, it's the economy, stupid? So the Democrats, who have been stealing from the government coffers, who have been laundering money through FTX, the Democrats who have been shutting down our energy infrastructure, the Democrats who have been promoting a lie concerning Ukraine, the vast majority of the people want more of this? Let's call it what it is, folks. It's voter fraud, plain and simple. So don't let anyone, especially these so-called conservative pundits, convince you otherwise. Now, hopefully the lawfare that attorney Leo Donfrio outlined on a recent J.D. Rucker show is going to be applied both in Pennsylvania and in Arizona. Pennsylvania, with the senatorial race between Oz and Fetterman, and out in Arizona concerning the gubernatorial race between Carrie Lake and the cheater-in-chief, Katie Hobbs. Now, you can get some detail on this strategy, this lawfare strategy, on J.D. Rucker's November 14th post on Substack. So go check it out. And if you don't have a link to it, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com. Oh, by the way, folks, I'd love to hear from you on anything else, too. Just email me there. kdbeer1961@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Well, let's keep moving. I'm running out of time here. You know, just this past week, we had the G20 summit, the 2022 G20 summit out in, I think it was Malaysia. And, of course, Klaus Schwab was there along with Bill Gates. None of them are elected. Neither, I should say, are elected, but both are there hobnobbing with all of their planted heads or chiefs of state, so to speak. And again, Klaus Schwab's out there promoting the Great Reset to all the world leaders. And he says in his own words, in less than a minute and a half, that after they achieve their Great Reset, the world's going to be a very different place. Let's hear it out of the mouth of this wicked man himself.
Of course, if you look at all the challenges, we can speak about the multi-crisis, an economic, a political, a social, an ecological, an institutional crisis. But actually, what we have to confront is a deep, systemic, and structural restructuring of our world. And this will take some time. And the world will look differently after we have gone through this transition process. Politically, the driving forces for this political transformation, of course, is the transition into a multipolar world, which has a tendency to make our world much more fragmented. And for these reasons, events like this one, the G20, and so on, are the very important connectors to avoid a too great segmentation.
This man's sick, folks. He's absolutely sick. We do not know yet the full extent and the systemic structural changes that will happen. You certainly do, you liar. You're going to turn us all into serfs with your central bank digital currency and the social credit scores that now the Biden administration is actually proposing, and some of the big credit card companies are going to tack on with regard to carbon credits. And then Bill Gates just tells us at the same summit that the carbon taxes are coming. Get ready. They're liars, folks. Remember, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which is a great segue into our newest segment, Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow
Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
Now remember, folks, for the love of money is the root of all evil, and you have to remember that. That's the truth, folks. Now, Ed Dowd is a red-pilled hedge fund manager, former hedge fund manager, who's actually standing up against this evil. But right now, I'd like to talk about another hedge fund manager and his forecast for 2023. This is Stanley Druckenmiller. Now, he made it big as a hedge fund, hedge fund manager over 30 years ago as he was working for George Soros. And they bet against the British pound back in 1992, and they made massive profits. I mean, trillions. Then he shut down his $12 billion hedge fund, known as Duquesne Capital Management, back in August of 2010, returning the monies to his clients. And now I guess he's retired, but he's out there talking. Well, this is a nine-minute clip of Stanley Druckenmiller talking about the 2023 economy. This is very much worth the time because you need to understand what these insiders working with people like George Soros are actually seeing coming. And this is all part of the takedown to get us into the Great Reset. So let's have a listen.
30 years ago, we shorted the pound in the quantum fund. I didn't know whether the pound was going to devalue. What I did know was if they didn't devalue in the next 6 months, my fund was going to lose 50 basis points. If they did devalue, I was going to make 2,000 basis points. So it was a 40-to-1 one-way risk-reward bet. If you look at what the Fed did, the radical gamble they took to get inflation up 30 basis points from 1.7 to 2, it's to me sort of a risk-reward bet. You bet one to lose 40, and they lost. And who really lost? Poor people in the United States, ravaged by inflation, the middle class, and my guess is the U.S. economy for years to come because of the extent of the asset bubble in time and duration and breadth that went on. The other thing I'll say is I've been wrong a lot in my career, and when I do, I correct my mistake. What was particularly mind-boggling to me, 2 to 3 months later, inflation takes off. It's no longer a theory. It's actually happening. We come up with this ridiculous theory of transitory. I mean, so we have $5 trillion in fiscal stimulus. We have $5 trillion in QE. Janet Yellen is running down the TGA account, so that's another trillion in stimulus. And if you remember the monetary framework in the fall of 2020, they were no longer going to forecast. They were going to be data dependent and wait till they see the whites of inflation's eyes. So guess what? They saw the whites of their eyes, and what did they do? They forecast that it was going to be transitory. When you make a mistake, you got to admit you're wrong and move on. That 9 or 10 months that they just sat there and bought $120 billion in bonds, I think the repercussions of that are going to be with us for a long, long time. There's a lot of people out there saying, well, Putin caused it. Year to year before he invaded. And all this crazy stuff we did was to get inflation from 1.7 to 2. And we were already at 7. But yeah, once you light the match, and we found this out in the 70s, inflation rotates. That summer everybody kept talking about used car prices are going to come down, this can come down. That's not the way it works. And by the way, there are a lot of disinflationary things happening now in the goods sectors. But so the UK unions, okay, do you think they're going to come in the spring? and they're going to negotiate, and they're going to say, oh, well, the five-year forward is 2.3, so yeah, I'll take a 2.3 raise.
Right.
No, it's like the railroad workers. They just got 24% over 3 years. When you lose that much purchasing power, so then the wage negotiations, it seeps in there. Then, of course, there's customers of companies that have to raise their wages, and the thing spirals. And that's what we're dealing with, and that's the position the Fed's got themselves in with basically a boom-bust policy. But, yeah, they were not alone. The fiscal stimulus was a huge part of this. But to be fair, they enabled it. The government can't spend $5 trillion if they don't print it. It's conventional wisdom, which I agree with, that stocks go up over the long term. Okay. Yeah. The problem is we've become a little complacent about what does long term mean. If you bought the Dow in 1929, you got back to even in 1954. As you just pointed out, the Dow was in 1966 where it was in 1982. When I look back at the secular bull market starting in 82, let's just take a trip down memory lane. We had a president who said government was the problem, not the solution. We had a guy who fired all the air traffic controllers in the country when they wanted a big raise. We now have a president who is a union man who says he's trying to beat inflation, who cheers a 24% over 3 year reward to the railroad unions. We have a president who thinks government is the solution, not the problem. More importantly, or I'd say in terms of what we're talking about, if you look at valuations back then, the stock market was 50% of GDP. It's now 150 down from 225. That's because 5 years yielded 15% when I started Duquesne, so real rates were high. That's why we were at 8 times depressed earnings. We're now, 18, 19 times inflated earnings that I have a very strong feeling are going to be down next year. Then you have the secular forces. You were right on the initial ramp of globalization, a fantastic thing. Building supply chains around the world increases efficiency, causes disinflation. That's been a trend for 20 or 30 years. Going the other way now. We're disentangling all that. That's going to be inflationary. And then finally, and we've already kind of alluded to it, the last 10 years of the bull market, you put it all in hyperdrive with $30 trillion of QE and zero rates. Now the consequences of that are born, and all those factors that cause that bull market, they're not only stopping, they're reversing, every one of them. We're going from QE to QT, unless you live in England this week. They're really unfolding. So when I put all that together, the one thing I bristle a little about when I hear people on your network is they say, well, I'm bearish, but I'm bullish for the long term. Look, you can have a period of 15, 20 years, 10 years where the market doesn't go anywhere. That doesn't mean you can't make money. But it made money, plenty of money in the 70s at various times. We had 260% rallies. I'm not saying, go get another job and you can't do stocks. I'm just saying we've had a hurricane behind us for 30 or 40 years and it's reversing. And I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, it's my central forecast. The Dow won't be much higher in 10 years than it is today. I will be stunned if we don't have a recession in 23. Don't know the timing, but certainly by the end of 23. I will not be surprised if it's not larger than the so-called average garden variety than it is today. I will be stunned if we don't have a recession in 23. Don't know the timing, but certainly by the end of 23. I will not be surprised if it's not larger than the so-called average garden variety. And I don't rule out, not my forecast, but I don't rule out something really bad. Why? Because if you look at the liquidity situation that has driven this, we're going to go from all this QE to QT. We're following an asset bubble. We've been doing all this running down the SPR, which is now, that's the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's now below 84 levels, even though obviously oil consumption is much higher. We've had a bunch of myopic policies that have actually delayed the liquidity shrinkage. QT has been almost entirely offset by Janet Yellen running down the Treasury savings account. By the way, pretty amazing policy. She could have sold 10 years for under 1% during this time. Instead, she runs down the Treasury savings account. So all that has masked liquidity shrinkage, but it really comes into full gear. And she can continue this for a while. We can do the SPR for a while, stimulative stuff. But by the first quarter of 23, it kind of goes the other way. So our central case is a hard landing by the end of 23. But I don't know. I've been wrong on a lot of things. I could be wrong on this. But since I do it for a living, that's our forecast, which is a recession in 23.
Now, he was right on. You're getting them from a deep state insider, folks. But I want to say one thing where he was wrong. Money will not be made during this quote-unquote recession. Depression is a better word for it. No, money will not be made. Wealth will be transferred by these vultures. So it'll come out of yours and my pockets in terms of our pension funds or our 401ks or even our savings accounts. And it'll be taken by these vultures. The love of money, the root of all evil, folks. Look at what happened with FTX and the crypto funds. It's greed, folks. But we have to keep moving. The right time, right now, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. Hey, Henrietta. Folks, it's really cold here in western Pennsylvania. I think outside right now it's like 25 or 28 degrees. So what I'd like to do today is talk about dressing for the cold as a homesteader. You know, just because it's cold outside doesn't mean that as a homesteader or a prepper, you're not outside. Now, one of the biggest mistakes made by newbies, and I'm telling you, this happens all the time, and I hear so many horror stories concerning this, is the way they dress for the cold weather. And what they typically do is they get a big insulated parka. That's a big mistake, folks. What you want to do as a prepper, and you do outside work, you even have work to do in your woodlot or your garden in the wintertime, but you have to dress properly as a prepper for the cold, and that involves one word, layering. Now, what I mean by that is you wear a lot of layers of clothing rather than that big heavy parka just over your shirt and trousers. Because as you work outside, you begin to generate more calories or consume more calories, and then you start to heat up, your metabolism increases, you start to sweat. And if you don't get some of the heat out, you're actually going to get chilled and possibly sick. Key here is to layer. So what I like to do, and I don't even wear the thermals unless it's extremely cold, and I'll put a pair of thermal underwear on. I start with a t-shirt and then a flannel shirt. Then I'll put maybe a jean shirt or a line jean shirt over top of that. That cuts some of the wind penetration. And then depending upon how cold it is, I'll just progressively layer those quilted, you know, insulated shirts, getting larger and larger. I typically wear like a 44, 48, and then the next one would be 2X, and the third one might be a 3X. So then I look like the Hulk when I'm outside working, but as it starts to warm up later in the day and as I start to exert calories and energy, I just slowly take off some of that till my body temperature is regulated. And you can work all day outside in the winter using this layering method, and you'll never be overheated and you'll never be chilled. That's something I learned over the years, folks. I wanted to share it with you. Oh, and one more thing. Don't forget to cover your head and ears, like your mom always used to say. And don't believe all these reports out there debunking this old myth that we lose most of our body heat through our heads, because experience has proven to me that that's true. I don't care what these pencil-pushing lab geeks and all their scientific studies trying to prove or disprove this. I'm telling you from experience, cover your heads and especially your ears when it's windy, and you'll stay a lot warmer. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving. And now it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, you know, folks, a lot of people in their heads, and we covered it in the Kabuki Theater update, that the red wave didn't happen. Well, in some senses it did, and other senses it didn't. One huge success was this new group, this grassroots group called Moms for Liberty. They are a membership over 100,000 members now, and they have changed school board policy across the country by firing superintendents and banning critical race theory. Just Tuesday evening this past week, Berkeley County School District in South Carolina fired. They were taken over by six conservative endorsed, you know, candidates for the school board from this group, Moms for Liberty. Within 2 hours after calling the board to order, they cleaned house. They fired a liberal superintendent, terminated the district's lawyer, and banned critical race theory, and then set up a committee to decide whether certain books and materials should be banned from their schools. This report I'd like to play for you now was from NBC right before the election. So this is dated. Let me get this one up here. NBC Moms for Liberty fires superintendent and bans CRT. So remember, this is before the election. Have a listen.
Now, NBC News national investigative reporter Tyler Kincaid is covering the schools issue for us today. He spent the weekend at the national summit of the conservative parents' right group, Moms for Liberty. Tyler, this group only came into existence about a year and a half ago. It has seen pretty dramatic growth, though. Talk to us about how that happened.
Yeah, well, when they started, Aaron, they got a lot of airtime on places like Fox News, Glenn Beck, Talk Radio, and so on. And the founders also had connections to some Republican operatives, so that certainly helped. But I talked to a bunch of rank-and-file chapter members of the summit, and they all told a similar story about how they got involved. They were upset about mask mandates and school closures during the pandemic. They started looking for information online and on Facebook about what they could do. And then they stumbled across Moms for Liberty and got linked in. The group now says they have nearly 100,000 members in 37 states, and they've only existed for about 18 months.
There were some pretty big Republican names at this summit there. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, for example, gave the keynote. I want to play a little bit of what he had to say and ask you about it on the other side.
Our school system is for educating kids, not indoctrinating kids.
So, Tyler, talk to us about some of the other big speakers there and what their messages were.
Right. Governor DeSantis was a big crowd pleaser. There were a lot of Mamas for DeSantis stickers all over the place. And he received an award from the group before his speech. But the other names included people like Betsy DeVos, Trump's education secretary, Senator Rick Scott, who heads up the Senate Republican election arm. And their presence just shows how much of a player Moms for Liberty has become in conservative politics. But you also have people from conservative think tanks leading trainings for activists, a lot of talk about how school mental health programs are forms of indoctrination, which the crowd cheered to. And Florida lawmakers talking about filing more so-called parental rights bills next year, Aaron.
What kind of impact does this group, this Moms for Liberty, really hope to have on the midterm elections that are coming up?
Right. So the local chapters are going to be focused on school board races, and their supporters tend to be conservative or Republican. So you just play that out. The midterms are all about turnout. If you have a base of conservative leading voters engaged in hyper-local elections, school boards, that's going to have an effect up the ballot. That's exactly what Senator Rick Scott said. And that's what folks like him are counting on, Aaron, to see. They see Moms for Liberty as a boost for the GOP's chances overall to take back Congress and hold on to a lot of governor's offices.
All right. National investigative reporter Tyler Kincaid with us today. Tyler, thank you.
So remember, this report from Tyler Kincaid was A lot of good information there, folks. Then this NBC report, just this week, right after the election.
Dr. Tiffany Richardson, the district's on-staff lawyer, was fired first. Then Superintendent Dion Jackson was fired. The board also hired their replacement at the same time, even though Barrow said he, as a board member, was unaware of that prior to the meeting.
Is terminated.
The board also announced Anthony Dixon was hired as the new superintendent. Barrow wants to know who hired Dixon ahead of the firing of Jackson. Chairman McQuillan would not answer questions about why the firings happened. He said this is a personnel matter. Melissa Soule is a teacher who used to teach in Berkeley County. Her son attends a Berkeley County school. But after last night, the changes, including the board's decision to not allow critical race theory to be taught, she's going to take him out of the district.
So why would he go to Berkeley County School if I'm pulling, I have to pull him out?
You are planning to pull your son?
Yeah, he'll go to virtual SC, he'll be homeschooled.
So there you have it, folks. The way they spin all of this. Do you hear that? It's crazy, isn't it? But what they do is they give you the information. They cite authority from, like, this David Barrows. He was fired, folks. He was an ousted board chairman. Now, it doesn't matter what he calls it. He could call it a travesty or a political witch hunt, which, guess what? It is a political witch hunt. Just like they have been imposing upon the majority, we the people, each and every day, for standing up to the truth, justice, and liberty. And they've been doing this. This is the slow, long march that's happened or started back in the 60s, who trained Barack Hussein Obama. So now they're crying foul when the tides are turned. You know, folks, it does have to start at the lowest levels. We have to overturn everything. And then the very top will crumble. And that's exactly what the Democrats have been doing for the past 60 years. Now this all has to be reverse engineered, beginning at the local level, beginning with parents getting involved and doing exactly what we heard in these reports. Okay, so Trump got the ball rolling in 2016, but now each and every one of us must get involved and keep the ball rolling. That's why I'm asking you folks to get out there, spread the word, share this link, get involved locally, do the kind of things we hear Seth doing. Support this, not financially, just by taking the link to this podcast and posting it on comment sections all around the internet. We'll get more listeners. We'll wake more people up, folks. We have to keep moving right now. It's time for our Absurdity
Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
So here we go again, folks. You probably heard about this already, but the House Republicans announced this week an investigation of the Joe Biden crime family. So this was announced on Thursday, and they announced they're going to investigate the serial liar and crook Joe Biden himself, the imposter in chief. This came out of Representative James Comer's Oversight Committee. He's the ranking member now as the majority. And he's released a report on Thursday detailing what they've uncovered. And he said in this clip, we're going to hear that they're sending letters to the Biden administration officials and family associates, saying voluntary production of documents relative to this investigation. Let's hear it out of his own mouth, and then I'll explain to you why it's in the Absurdian report.
We are releasing a report today that details what we have uncovered. We are also sending letters to the Biden administration officials and Biden family associates renewing our request for voluntary production of documents relevant to this investigation. This is an investigation of Joe Biden, the President of the United States, and why he lied to the American people about his knowledge and participation in his family's international business schemes. National security interests require the committee conduct investigation, and we will pursue all avenues, avenues that have long been ignored. Committee Republicans have uncovered evidence of federal crimes committed by and to the benefit of members of the president's family. These include conspiracy or defrauding the United States, wire fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, violations of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, tax evasion, money laundering, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. The Biden family's business dealings implicate a wide range of criminality, from human trafficking to potential violations of the Constitution. In the 118th Congress, this committee will evaluate the status of Joe Biden's relationship with his family's foreign partners and whether he is a president who is compromised or swayed by foreign dollars and influence. I want to be clear. This is an investigation of Joe Biden, and that's where the committee will focus in this next Congress.
Popcorn. Get your popcorn here. Next show starts in 15 minutes. Hey, folks. They're going to have an investigation to officially tell us what we already know and yet do nothing about it, all the while wasting more of our taxpayer money? Here's an idea. Why don't you take that money instead, James Comer, and investigate the billions sent to Ukraine and tie that all into the FTX crypto exchange scandal and the money laundering there? This is more bread and circus, folks. This could have been in Kabuki Theater, but I put it in the Absurdian Report because that's how absurd this is. But like I said, we have to keep moving. A lot to cover here today. And right now, it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Now, you know this old saying, elections have consequences, and stolen elections have bad consequences? Well, that's why we all need to get involved, folks, like this man did out in Arizona addressing the Maricopa County supervisors. And you may have heard him already, but this is a classic. He says they are the cancer that's killing this nation. Let's have a listen. He says more than most could say all day in less than 2 minutes. Have a listen.
Good morning. Once again, the eyes of the world are upon Maricopa County for another botched election. Am I here to accuse you of stealing the vote? Heavens no, for that would make me a terrorist, wouldn't it? Let me ask you, if you took your life savings to a bank and the teller put them in a machine and the machine kicked out one out of four of your bills and the teller said, don't worry, we'll put them in box three over here and we'll let you know how many were in there later. We'll send them off to a separate location and someone will be sure to get back to you and tell you how much money you have. Would you be okay with that? No, you would not be okay with that. Now ask yourself the question, which is more valuable, your vote or your money? Now ask a lobbyist that same question. Now ask a campaign manager that question. Now ask Mark Zuckerberg that question, which is more valuable, your money or your vote or your country or this world or the corruption that is taking over every single county in this nation? And then you look into your own soul and you look back at yourself in the mirror and realize that you are the cancer that is tearing this nation apart. Good day.
Thank you. Our next speaker.
Well said, sir. And my message to all of you listeners out there is get involved. And there are so many ways. The Lord's given you talents, folks. And he's given you true power and authority in Jesus Christ. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. So get involved. Maybe it's by prayer. Maybe it's by sending some money to your special cause. Maybe it's posting these links of these podcasts I do every week. Folks, I put a lot of time and effort, to mention money, into supporting this platform. And I'm not asking for a penny from you. I'm just asking for your help to market it. Get it out there. Let's get it to twice as many people next week, four times as many people the week after, eight times as many people the week after that. And one by one, we'll wake up America. So get involved, just like Seth does every week. In fact, this week, Seth was in the news again. He had a great call to InfoWars, and I'd like to play it for you, where he talked about the chemtrails and the disbursement of nanotechnology. And I've seen it, folks. I've seen it firsthand. And there are these self-assembling nanostructures in this residue that he's collecting from the chemtrails. Real fast. What he does is he places some clean microscope slides outside. And as the dew comes down in the morning after a heavy spraying day, he takes these slides, he allows them to dry, then he stains them, puts them under a high-power medical microscope. And you would be blown away by what he's finding. And when he does a control on a non-spray day, you don't see this. Now, these images that he's capturing correlate to certain studies on nanotechnologies that have been compiled in some papers, and we may talk about that next week. Nanotech paper. And I told Seth that I think we should do a video maybe on Revolver or one of the other platforms, perhaps even Brighteon. This is new information. I haven't seen anybody researching this. But here's Brother Seth on InfoWars back on the 16th talking about it. Have a listen.
Let's go to Seth in Pittsburgh. Wants to talk about chemtrails. I think you mean aerosol injections, Seth. We want to use the scientific phrase so regular people don't know what we're talking about when we discuss our chemtrails. Thanks for calling in, Seth. You're on the air.
Geoengineering is what they call it, right?
Right. Yes. Very sophisticated.
Hey, first of all, I'm going to go short with the accolades. Been listening to Alex for a very long time. I'm very proud of you, Harrison. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So what I wanted to talk about is I've been putting slides out when they spray heavy. And I've found several self-assembling nanocrystals that I've identified through the search engine on NIH.gov. A lot of it is, bimetallic nanocrystals, the core structures, the satellite crystals that assemble to that self-assembling nanothread. And recently, I have found a lot of self-assembling nano circuitry. And you can see the crystals that were starting to aggregate to the main structures that didn't quite make it. But the other thing I really wanted to talk about as well is I've also been, I ended up with a vial of Pfizer. And I've been looking at that under the microscope and finding very similar structures in that as well. And I've been testing it with my own blood. So I have no injections, but, testing it with my blood. I've been testing it by putting it next to Wi-Fi towers. I've been heating it up a little bit on the stove, and this stuff definitely assembles on its own. And the biggest warning I want to tell people is it's also in the food. I have an article sitting in front of me from December 3rd, 2012 from Grist, nanoparticles in your food. You're already eating them. What's engineered in a lab, added to processed foods, and never labeled? If you thought GMOs were mysterious, try nanoparticles. It's in the supplement. It's listed under silicon dioxide. It's listed under titanium dioxide. It's in our toothpaste. I mean, this is one of the reasons why Skittles was banned in 43 countries, because of the titanium dioxide coating. They're using it as a primer. So I've been working with a scientist who actually is holding three patents that they're using to kill us with. Carbon nanotubes, titanium dioxide nanotubes, and yes, the graphene oxide.
So we only have about a minute left in this segment. Wrap it up for us. What do you think they're doing with all this? I mean, you're talking about chemtrails spraying these nanoparticles in your food. I'm not saying I disagree with you, but just help us tie it in together. What is the purpose of all of these self-assembling nanoparticles in everything?
It's human augmentation. So if you look at the very first page of Klaus Schwab's Fourth Industrial Revolution, he talks about merging technologies such as AI, nanotechnology, biotechnology, quantum computing, and fusion of these technologies across physical and digital biological worlds. And on page two, it says new ways of using technology to change behavior.
Right.
I mean, they are trying. Westworld is a really, really good predictive programming. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I mean, it kind of falls right along that same kind of.
Well, you brought up a bunch of topics that we're going to discuss in the next hour, including AI and the World Economic Forum helping to guide the AI policy across the world.
Great job, Seth. You know, truth is important, folks, but it must be tempered with love and said in humility. Just as you hear Seth every time he's on these public forums, you can hear it in his voice. Every time he goes public, he tells you the truth, and he says it in love with humility. Now, the scientist he mentioned is me, but I need to correct one thing he said. Yeah, I do hold multiple patents, folks. I think it's like 20 national and international patents on a variety of proven technologies as diverse as windows to windmills and everything in between. In fact, those big windmills you see, I wrote one of the original patents, actually several of the original patents for the reinforcement used in those back in the 90s. And I was called Don Quixote for chasing windmills. Now, I don't believe that's going to replace power generation. And I told my management that wasn't the point. My point was that we need to see the asymmetrical truth that wasn't being embraced. And I saw this coming back in the 90s, folks. And I saw opportunity for my employer. And I just heard from a guy that I brought back from my former employer to help us ramp this company up, my company up, that the company I'm involved with as an operating partner, there's a lot of people that are involved with this. But anyways, back to the point. That technology to generate a reinforcement for the big wind turbines was the most profitable product and the highest revenue earning product in the entire plant. Did you hear that, folks? Yet I was called Don Quixote. But I'm getting off point. My point is that I don't hold patents for what he was referring to. And he was referring to the nanotubes and the graphene oxide. But I did develop the chemistry needed to grow those nanotubes. I was involved with a major company. I'm not going to mention it because of confidentiality agreements. But that's the same graphene oxide they're finding in the vaccines today. And I'm not very proud of that. And I didn't see that one coming. But that's what Seth was referring to. So, folks, it's very important to embrace the truth. And here's another thought concerning the truth that I've learned over the years. Not liking the truth doesn't make it less true. But I hear a lot of people using comments and phrases like this. Well, I don't want to believe it. Almost as if that's some sort of special incantation that's going to protect them from reality, you know? But you know what really is going on here in their minds? It's cognitive dissonance. That's what's going on. Because they want to believe that the government and pharma and all these establishment hacks on the news, these news readers that are paid off, have their best interests at heart. So they shelve their critical thinking and stop all questioning and consideration of alternative thoughts and viewpoints like we share here on the show every week, and they go into brain dead mode. Now, if you think that your government has your best interests at heart, you're sorely mistaken, folks. And that's why it's so important that you get involved. And it's so important to listen to the last segment on here to understand where true power and authority come from and how you can embrace it. But the way you ought to view your government instead of the great benefactor or the benevolent administrator operations that provide government services who have been fighting each other since the so-called Civil War, the war between the states. I'm talking about the Democrats and the Republicans, the now known out in the open uniparty, as they rape and pillage we the people all the time. There's a good website you can go to. It's called theamericanstatesassembly.org. Lots of good information there. But we have to keep moving, and right now it's time for our segment known as Back to the Future. Where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. So we're going to wind the clock back. We're going to wind it back a while. I'm not going to be specific right now, but we're going to wind it back to a book that came out some years ago known as Vote Scam. It was written by two brothers, James and Kenneth Collier, and it's a fascinating and quite daring investigation into a project that is almost foreboding today, and that's vote scams. So what they did decades ago was figure out how the American voting system actually works. You know, they ask questions like, how can the outcome of these elections be so accurately predicted by election polling until this last blatant scam that we hit in the midterms? How are the voters counted so fast? Why is so much of the process kept secret? Now, it's almost weird and wild, and I could say astonishing, when you look at what they wrote back and researched back in the 90s and then published in 2000. You could call this an explosive investigation. I love this book, folks. I first learned about these two brothers back in the 90s on shortwave radio, WWCR. And it's amazing how much of what they said is true. You know, they came face to face with the Supreme Court justice in this investigation, one of them who rigged a vote fraud case. And then they came head to head with America's most powerful former publisher in America, the owner of the Washington Post, who won't let her newspapers and TV stations deal with vote rigging. And they came across all sorts of corrupt politicians, computer wizards, professors, lawyers, news people, aristocrats, CIA operatives, outraged citizens, conspiracy buffs, crusaders like you and me, folks, involved in telling the truth with love and humility. They uncovered scandal on an unthinkable dimension. And this was all researched and done in the 90s. And I'm talking about it now, just like I did after the election steal in 2020. You can go out to archive.org, just type in vote scam, and you can get a PDF copy of this book. It's very difficult to find online. I think there's some used copies on Amazon. We'll see how long that lasts. Now, it was finally published in 2000 under a private label because there was no publisher that would publish it. And then it appeared on bookshelf stores for a very short period, just like Bill Cooper's Behold the Pale Horse, which got me involved with William Cooper 35 years ago. And I hear these books are all being yanked. You can't find Behold a Pale Horse online anymore. You can't find it in bookstores just like this book. Now, one of the sons of the author says the book's even been removed from the Library of Congress. Can you believe that? And sadly, both of these brothers are now dead of quote-unquote natural causes. Maybe it was a broken heart after a lifetime of futile efforts bring this truth to light. But whatever the case, folks, they laid it out, and they proved and showed why incompetent politicians keep getting elected. And if you want to know why, read this book. Or if you're under the illusion that our so-called leaders care about the truth, then read this book. Or if you just have that uncomfortable feeling I talked about before, that the vote was stolen in 2022 and 2020. Well, it's been going on like this for a long time, folks. They just play ping pong. Red man, oh, it's your turn, blue lady. If you want to see what's really going on when your vote is cast, read this book. And if you think Biden won fair and square, by all means, read this book, folks. This has been going on for a long time, longer than decades. And the power in this is so absolute that it's been corrupting people so absolutely, yet nobody dare speak about this. Nobody gives it a fair and open hearing. But if you don't feel that way, and if you want to know the truth, read this book. It's hard to put down once you start it. And I'm telling you, you're going to be exposed to the cesspool of our political system and how it stays in power. So how do we apply this to today's freaky deaky news headlines? Well, the turncoat, Dr. Oz, who conceded the election, I think, the day of or the day after. Well, lawsuits are now being filed in Pennsylvania to delay certification of Fetterman after officials were detoured from the counting center to a closed building and held there for 6 hours on election day while the ballots were somewhere else. So there's two Pennsylvania election observers who filed a complaint against the Delaware County Board of Elections here in Pennsylvania after they were detained for 6 hours while the county's ballots and V-drives were taken to another location and out of their sight for 6 hours. Plus, they were prevented from entering the building at that time. The county did some very suspicious things with certain voter registrations after Election Day and after the votes or ballots were counted. Actually, we count ballots, but I hear people say, count votes. No, you count ballots of people who cast votes. So this is the definition of voter fraud, and it's going to be investigated. Lawfare is going to be applied, and we'll see if these judges strike it down on merit or standing. You know, it's too bad we don't have a Department of Justice or any kind of law enforcement that has any kind of kahunas to investigate actions like this. They're all too busy plotting against Trump supporters, kicking down doors of pro-lifers who are advocating for life rather than death, blessings rather than curses. You know, there's an emergency motion right now for a temporary restraining order to delay the certification in Delaware County, PA. It was filed on November 15th in Common Pleas Court. So the plaintiffs were Leah Hopes and Gregory Stenstrom, Colmissano. They'd like the certification stopped until a hearing at which they could present evidence that the county detoured the election night journey of the county's physical ballots and V-drives for 6 hours, where they stayed in a closed building with no poll watchers for 6 hours. The question is why? And then, after 6 hours in this closed building with no chain of custody, they were then taken to the centralized counting center at the Wharf Building in Chester. This is important, folks. And similar things are going on with Carrie Lake. Now, the difference between these two candidates is that Oz isn't involved, which makes me think he's a turncoat, a plant. Carrie Lake, she's all in. So our prayers ought to go out to Carrie Lake in Arizona, who's fighting the good fight right now, folks. Remember, all good has to do for evil to prevail is nothing. Now, with the time we have left, folks, I just want to share a little bit from my pastor last week. But before I do, I want to say something. You know, all people only have two choices. Either God is right and they are wrong, or God is wrong and they are right. Now, I've taken door one. I chose God, the God who created all of heaven and earth and every physical thing in the universe, from the atmosphere to the sparrow to you and me. God is right and I am wrong. Now, the converse to that, choice number two, saying that God is wrong and we are right, that's just a death sentence, folks. And that's going to lead to nothing but chaos and anarchy and despair. And what do we see right now? It almost makes you feel powerless, doesn't it? Powerless against all this corruption we see in the world, from the political heists like 2020 and 2022 in the midterms, to the corruption of public officials like the Biden crime family, to all the lies in the media concerning the coronavirus heist and the death jabs, to the corrupt money system, and don't even get me started on the FTX scandal. It's all leading us lockstep into this new global feudal system. And that's the truth, folks. And if you can't see it, if you can't see all this evil around you, maybe you need a wake-up chosen choice number two. I'm right and God is wrong. But I don't think that's the case for most listeners out there. I think you recognize the power and authority of the Most High God. And you recognize that you've made a lot of mistakes in your life. So to start this off and to share what I learned last week from my amazing pastor, Pastor Todd, I'd like to start by sharing with you two scriptures out of the book of Ephesians that we can refer to, as he did, as bookends. Now, the first one is Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 through 17. And here St. Paul wrote, "See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." So right there, we have a bookend. And the bookend saying that these days are evil. And then over in chapter 6, verses 10 through 12, he writes, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." So he starts by saying these days are evil, and he finishes by saying that the rulers of the darkness of this world come against us, the believers, at spiritual wickedness in high places. So my pastor called these two passages bookends for a powerful truth concerning real power and authority. And the bottom line, folks, is that there is evil in the world, and this evil explains all the sin and suffering in the world. So when people say, "Well, I just can't believe in a God that would allow all this sin and suffering," or I should say suffering, all you have to say is, it's here because of the evil that's in the world, God's fault. God's just letting us prove our true nature. And our true nature is that we're wrong and he's right. So one truth that we need to embrace from this is that we can either understand what the will of the Lord is, or we're going to fall for the wiles of the devil. That means his schemes. So let me ask you a question. As I shared all this information today, what was your response to this evil that we saw in the world, from death jabs to corrupt politics to money scandals to political scandals? You know, evil is an action that often causes a reaction, but we want to respond. Now, a lot of times people react with stress, anger. You know, with all this bad news that we hear day in and day out, from the scamdemic to the stolen elections to the propaganda in the media, day in and day out, does it stir you up? Does it make you angry? Does it get you frustrated? Does it stir in you a spirit of rebellion? Remember, for the spirit of witchcraft, that spirit is associated with rebellion. So don't fall for the wiles that the enemy has. So between these two bookends in Ephesians 5 over to Ephesians 6, Paul tells us how to deal with this spiritually. Now, what I'd like to do right now, and this is a little different than I usually do, I would like to play a song by Lauren Daigle. Actually, she sings it. She didn't write it. "Lord, I Need You." And this was sung this week in the middle of Todd's message by Hannah. Acapella. And she did a beautiful job. And I think she may have been inspired by Lauren Daigle. So I'd just like to play this 3-minute song, "Lord, I Need You." And reflect upon this a little bit and prepare your hearts for the wrap-up of this message.
Lord, I come, I confess, bowing here, I find my rest. Without you, I fall apart. You're the one that guides my heart. And Lord, I need you. Oh, I need you. Every hour I need. My righteousness, oh God, how I need. Your grace is more, where grace is found, is where you are, and where you are, Lord.
Was absolutely beautiful. You know, sometimes, folks, we get sucked into the ways of this world, and that's one of the reasons why we need him, why we need you, Lord. You know, the Bible said in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18, and be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. You know, the Bible also says, for where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. So Paul doesn't say, don't be filled with the Holy Spirit, but rather be filled with the Holy Spirit. And then he cheers up and says, sing some songs for Jesus. In verse 19, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs and singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Now, how would you feel if somebody came up to you and just started singing? That might be a little weird, but you know, there's this term, making melody in your heart. Doesn't mean that you're singing a song, but it's your perspective. It's the way that you go out and view a situation. For example, if I had two birds here and I could talk to them and they could understand me and they could talk like with Dr. Doodiddle, think about a vulture and a bird, a hummingbird. And I said to both of them, I'd like you to go out and fly over that field and come back and give me a report. Now, that vulture, with his perspective and no melody in his heart to the Lord, but rather a melody in his heart towards death, he might come back and say, I looked at the field and it was kind of empty and dead, but I did find a dead cow over in the northeast corner, and it looks like some tasty eating. I think I'm going to go back and get some of that dead cow. And the hummingbird comes and said, I flew over a field full of glory, the glory of the Lord. I saw beautiful flowers, blue flowers, yellow flowers, orange flowers, and my favorite of all, red. Same field, different melody in their hearts. That vulture had death on his heart, and that hummingbird had life. Think about all the things the Lord's done for you and us. Creation, salvation, victory over sin and death, an abundant life, love. And if you approach each and every day like that, making melody in your heart to the Lord, if you start every day like that, think about how different it'll be when you see people. And then maybe they'll just ask, hey, why are you so happy in the midst of all this craziness? And then be prepared to give an answer for the reason, for the hope that lies within. You know, our joy comes from the inside out, whereas what the devil does his oppression, his depression, his all of his wiles, they come from the outside and try to get in. And then Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 20, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So think about it, folks. Just give them thanks. Now, it's human nature to keep a list of wrongs, but how about keeping a list of rights? Because the joy of the Lord, which comes when we make melody in our hearts unto the Lord, is our strength. Now, here comes the tough part, and it starts in verse 21 of chapter 5. And this is what's between the two bookends of evil. Here's how we exercise true power and authority: by submitting ourselves one to another in the fear of God. Now, don't get this mistaken image of the fear of God. I like to say that the fear of God is nothing more than love on our knees. So what's the message here? Well, as true believers, we have to realize that we're all on the same team, and stop dividing on the incidentals. Is it a full immersion? Sprinkling for baptism. Is it a pre-trib or a post-trib rapture? Or is it a mid-trib rapture? Hey, folks, don't divide on the incidentals. Now, Paul talks about how we do this submission to one to another in three relationships. First, a relationship between husbands and wives, then a relationship between parents and children, and then a relationship between masters and servants, or today, bosses and the employees. Now, this is all addressed to people with power concerning those they interact with who have no power. And in these times, men had power over women who had no power. You talk about revolutionary. Jesus elevated women. And Jesus turned everything upside down. And when you're a Christian, that should change your entire perspective about true power and authority. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 through 28, as I opened the show, but Jesus called unto him and said, ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. Ever complain to your boss? Ever complain to your friend or coworker about how corrupt the government is? Well, get this, the next thing Jesus said in verse 26, but it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whoever will not be chief among you, let him be your servant, even as the Son of Man, that's Jesus, came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Now just stop for a minute there, folks, and reflect on that song that Lauren Daigle sang, Lord, I Need You. And remember, as you try to get your head around this, that Christian authority isn't about control, but rather influence. Jesus didn't wield some righteous arm of authority and power when he came here. No, he used influence. And we see that same encouragement, that same love and respect instructed between husbands and wives. We see that same message between parents and children. And we see that same message between masters and servants. You know, women were oppressed in this culture. Children were like one step above dogs. And what was it, 70% or no, I'm sorry, 30% of the population back then were bond servants. So this was a very powerful message to those with power concerning how they should deal with people without power. And the message there from husband, parent, to employer was humble yourself. Show mutual respect. Remember that we all serve the same God. Now, I'd like to wrap this up by just telling you that we're never powerless, because as true believers, we can always choose to serve and reflect the light, love, and life of Jesus. Did I say that right? Light, life, and love of Jesus as we walk in the Spirit, not in the flesh, sharing truth with love. in a spirit of humility. Now, this mutual surrender will benefit so many more than just the husband and the wife, the child and the parent, boss and the employee. It's going to create an environment that's contagious as that joy of the Lord is reflected and manifests, and more people are going to be drawn into that. And there's all sorts of ways to do this. If you don't have money, we all have time. If you don't have any kind of talent with your voice, maybe you're really good with a musical instrument. Or maybe you have a talent that you can share with others. Maybe you're a handyman and you can help people fix things. Or maybe you're good with money and you can help somebody balance their checkbook. Whatever it is, do it with a good attitude so that other people can just be infused with this joy that you come with, which is our strength. You know, folks, we need to stand true in the midst of all this evil. And the key is to exert power and authority that doesn't come from us, but comes from on high. And when we do that, folks, I'm telling you, we're going to see things change. We're going to see that field like the hummingbird did and not the vulture. And in the words of Winston Churchill, as we fight this good fight and get involved, never give in, never, no, never.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, that same spirit that rose Jesus from the grave, the third person of the Holy Trinity, the most high and holy spirit, he lives in you and me. That same power. So let's lift our hands up with Jeremy Camp and praise the Lord, that same power.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, to show a world that looks like there is no hope that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace, to stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times you are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus.